What if I told you that money, this abstract concept we obsess over, is really just a promise between strangers? Strip away the mystique, and finance is simply the story of how humans learn to trust each other across time and distance. From clay tablets in ancient Babylon recording grain debts to algorithms trading billions in microseconds, money has been humanity's most transformative technology. It funded the Renaissance, built empires, and connected continents. Yet it remains deeply misunderstood, feared as the root of evil, while simultaneously driving every advancement we celebrate. Here's the paradox. By 2006, the world's financial derivatives reached $473 trillion, 10 times larger than the entire global economy. We've created a shadow planet of pure finance, floating above the real world of goods and services, and most of us have no idea how it works or why it matters. For centuries, lending money at interest was considered sinful, a stain on the soul. Medieval Christians condemned usury, forcing Jews into the role of moneylenders and creating figures like Shakespeare's Shylock, demanding his pound of flesh. This wasn't just prejudice. It reflected a fundamental tension in how societies viewed money. Was it a tool for productive enterprise or a weapon for exploitation? The Medici family transformed lending from back-alley transactions into legitimate institutions. Starting as Florentine money changers, Giovanni de' Bicci de' Medici created systems where credit flowed safely across borders, funding trade and art. The breakthrough? Banking works when you're big and legitimate enough that trust replaces fear. This shift from intimidation to institutionalization birthed modern finance. For millennia, wealth meant heavy metal. Spanish galleons hauled silver across oceans, only to discover flooding Europe with precious metals made everyone poorer. The price revolution revealed money's value isn't what it's made of, but what people exchange for it. Adam Smith called banking a wagon way through the air. By substituting paper for gold, banks multiplied money's power exponentially. By 1913, British bank deposits reached nearly £1.2 billion versus just £45 million in banknotes. Money had become virtual, existing as ledger entries rather than physical objects. America's free banking era spawned over 30,000 undercapitalized banks by 1922, a financial Wild West that later fueled the Great Depression. The real transformation came in 1971, when Nixon severed money's last link to gold. Consumer debt exploded from 16% of disposable income in 1959 to 24% by 2007, reaching $2.5 trillion. Governments discovered they could fund wars by selling promises to pay later. Medieval Florence pioneered this alchemy, forcing wealthy citizens to lend through tradable, interest-bearing bonds. Brilliantly perverse, the same oligarchs issuing bonds also bought them, ensuring repayment. The Rothschild family perfected this game, becoming the world's central bankers without a country. Between 1815 and 1859, they issued 14 sovereign bonds worth nearly £43 million, requiring borrowers to issue sterling-denominated bonds payable in London. Their innovation created a global capital market where nations competed for investor confidence. But this power came with a dark side. The Confederate States learned this painfully. Their bonds became worthless after losing the Civil War. Throughout Latin America, countries defaulted repeatedly, sometimes facing military intervention from creditors. Bond markets weren't just financial, they were geopolitical weapons. By the early 19th century, fewer than 250,000 British bondholders, just 2% of the population, controlled wealth exceeding double the national income, consuming half of public spending through interest payments. Germany in 1923 experienced the ultimate bond market catastrophe. Inflation reached 182 billion percent annually, with prices becoming 1.26 trillion times higher than a decade earlier. Writer Elias Canetti described it as a witch's Sabbath of devaluation, where people felt as worthless as their currency. The hyperinflation obliterated the German middle class. Rentiers, civil servants, professionals, anyone on fixed incomes, creating social trauma that would later fuel extremism. Argentina's collapse reveals inflation's devastating power. Once among the world's 10 richest nations in 1913, with per capita GDP at 72% of US levels, it plummeted to just 34% by 1998. The cause? No major group wanted price stability. Capital owners preferred deficits and devaluation, while labor accepted the wage-price spiral. In 1989, monthly inflation exceeded 100%, triggering supermarket riots that killed 14 in Rosario. The cruel irony? While inflation destroyed domestic savings, Argentina's dollar-denominated external debt kept growing, immune to devaluation. By 2001, they announced history's biggest sovereign default, $81 billion in bonds. The lesson? Inflation is a hidden tax falling hardest on those least able to protect themselves, erasing decades of work in months. The 1929 Wall Street crash saw the Dow Jones plummet 89% over 3 years, not recovering until 1954. This triggered the Great Depression. Output fell by a third, unemployment hit 25%, world trade shrank by two-thirds. Bubbles are dangerous, not because prices rise irrationally, but because their collapse freezes credit, destroys businesses, and eliminates jobs. The psychological damage shapes how entire generations view risk and trust. The most fundamental financial impulse is protecting ourselves against an unknowable future. Hurricane Katrina exposed catastrophic failures, 1,836 deaths and $41 billion in claims revealed fatal flaws when insurers denied coverage by attributing damage to floods rather than wind. Insurance evolved from the Scottish Minister's Widow's Fund in 1744 into massive institutional investors managing over £100 billion. The welfare state emerged not from socialism, but from Bismarck's Germany, explicitly designed to create the conservative state of mind that springs from the feeling of entitlement to a pension. War expanded welfare systems dramatically, but individualistic cultures exposed a fatal flaw. People gamed the system. British social transfers ballooned from 2.2% of GDP in 1930 to nearly 17% by 1980. Meanwhile, financial derivatives, instruments allowing risk to slice and traded, should have distributed risk efficiently. Instead, they became weapons of financial mass destruction, concentrating risk in ways no one understood until too late. Financial markets aren't separate from human nature. They're its purest expression. Every bubble reflects our greed, every crash our fear, every innovation our ingenuity. Over four millennia, we've evolved from clay tablets recording grain depths to algorithms executing billions in trades per second, following a sawtooth pattern of innovation and destruction. The system operates through Darwinian selection. Institutions with selfish genes, good at self-replication, proliferate, while the weak get devoured during crashes. Unlike biological evolution, finance exists within regulatory frameworks, attempting intelligent design. But as Schumpeter noted, capitalism requires the complete destruction of those existences which are irretrievably associated with the hopelessly unadapted. Today, as China's economy rises and Western dominance wanes, we're witnessing another great shift. The pre-1914 globalization ended catastrophically with World War I, a reminder that financial integration doesn't guarantee peace. Yet despite periodic reversals, finance's trajectory remains upward because financial intermediation permits more efficient resource allocation than any alternative. Money is our mirror, reflecting both our beauty and our blemishes. Don't blame the mirror for what it shows.